Do you believe in the free market? If you're an American, even a liberal American, you probably do. Because an almost spiritual belief in the power of markets to solve most problems is deeply woven into our national fabric. It's a powerful myth, a big myth, as it's called in the new book by Naomi Oreskes and Eric M. Conway, The Big Myth: How American Business Taught Us to Loathe Government and Love the Free Market. Naomi is a professor of history and science studies at UC San Diego, and Eric is a historian of science and technology at Caltech. Together, they write about how market fundamentalism is distorting our democracy and making some of our toughest problems harder to solve. Here's Naomi to share five of their big ideas.
Hi, I'm Naomi Oreskes. I'm a professor of the history of science at Harvard University. Together with Eric Conway, a historian of technology at Caltech, we wrote the best-selling book, Merchants of Doubt, which told the story of climate change denial. In that book, we showed that skepticism about climate science was rooted in politics, specifically the political ideology of market fundamentalism. Market fundamentalists believe in what they call the magic of the marketplace. They believe that the best way to solve our problems is to leave them to markets to solve. The problem with market fundamentalism is that it isn't true. It's based on magical thinking, deifying markets and demonizing government. Markets can solve problems, but they also create problems, including big ones like income inequality and the climate crisis, problems that require government to solve. But the market fundamentalists don't want to accept this, because if they did, they'd have to change their views. They'd have to accept that markets aren't magic, and government is not the enemy. History proves that we need government to manage markets, to address market failure, and to solve problems that we as individuals can't solve on our own. Our new book, The Big Myth, explains where market fundamentalism came from and how the big myth came to be accepted by so many Americans. I'm going to share with you five key insights from the book. Insight number one, we've been taught to loathe government and love the free market. History shows that many U.S. government programs, from the interstate highway system to the internet, and from Social Security to Medicare, have been enormous successes. These initiatives have strengthened the economy, created jobs, and made life healthier and wealthier for millions of Americans. History also shows that we need government to manage markets. During the Gilded Age in the late 19th century, anti-competitive practices led to giant, powerful, ruthless monopolies. The Sherman Antitrust Act was passed to protect competition and prevent too much money and power ending up in too few hands. During the Great Depression, millions of Americans were thrown out of work and onto breadlines. It took government action to get the economy back on track. And our current situation tells us that markets can create problems like the climate crisis that require government action to fix. But despite these facts of history and current events, many Americans see government as somehow a threat. They see taxation as a form of theft, as opposed to the dues we pay for being part of the organization we call America. Many Americans also think that big government threatens our freedom. In fact, history shows that the federal government has, by and large, worked to protect and expand individual freedom. And many Americans believe that the so-called invisible hand of the marketplace will sort things out better than any government ever could. Why do so many Americans hold these views when history clearly shows that they aren't true, and that many of our most serious problems were created by markets and require governments to remedy? The reason, we think, is that for the past century, this is what we have been told. We've been told that markets are efficient and government is inefficient. We've been told that government programs don't work and take away our freedoms. We've been told, as Ronald Reagan put it, that government isn't the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. This is what we call the big myth. So who sold us this story? In our book, we answer that question. The answer is powerful leaders in American business. Insight number two. The people who told us this story, who sold us the big myth, were business leaders trying to protect their own self-interest. American capitalism in the early 20th century was extremely dangerous. In 1900, one in every 1,000 American workers was killed on the job, the equivalent of 1.5 million people every year. It was the equivalent of a COVID pandemic every year. Indeed, observers at the time likened it to war and epidemics. Some of these workers were children, as young as 2 years old, because no laws prohibited child labor. And when workers were injured or killed on the job, their families received nothing, because there was no workmen's compensation. When reformers argued for laws banning child labor and requiring workmen's compensation, they were opposed by business leaders who claimed that this was not only unfair to business owners, but a threat to American freedom. A key player in this argument was the National Association of Manufacturers, or NAM, a trade group that still exists today and has fought action to stop the climate crisis. NAM claimed that the reformers were all socialists and communists who wanted to destroy liberty. They claimed that freedom was, quote, indivisible, so if you compromised economic freedom, it was only a matter of time before political and religious freedoms were compromised as well. And if you compromised the freedom of manufacturers to run their factories as they saw fit, even if that included killing children, well, it was only a matter of time until America succumbed to communism. Over the next 50 years, these business leaders pushed this argument in just about every venue and every way they could. One example involved a trade group called NELA, the National Electric Light Association. In the 1930s, NELA ran a massive propaganda campaign to get their point across. They paid academics to produce studies falsely claiming that electricity in the private sector was cheaper than government-run electricity. They recruited academics to write textbooks, or rewrite textbooks, with pro-market anti-government messages. They pressured schools and libraries to adopt these rewritten textbooks. And they funded academics to create new programs in high schools, colleges, and universities that focused on the virtues of laissez-faire capitalism and the alleged threats of big government. In short, NELA tried to control how Americans thought about property, capitalism, and regulation by controlling what we were taught in school. Insight number three. When the Great Depression hit, the market fundamentalists did not revisit their convictions. They doubled down. In the late 19th century, Americans needed government to protect competition in the face of ruthless monopolists. In the 20th century, we needed government to protect workers from injury and consumers from fraud. And during the Great Depression, we needed government to rescue capitalism from a state of near collapse. But the same business leaders who had defended child labor and lied about electricity fought the New Deal tooth and nail. Following the pattern created by NELA, the National Association of Manufacturers ran a massive propaganda campaign designed to discredit the New Deal. They hired Edward L. Bernays, the father of modern public relations, to spread the message that the New Deal reforms threatened American freedom. They waged a multi-front propaganda campaign to win public support for big business. How did they do this? They paid journalists and academic economists to write pro-industry anti-government columns. They circulated cartoons and posters warning about the dangers of unions and government spending. And they produced a highly successful syndicated radio show, The American Family Robinson, that criticized so-called foreign theories that threatened American free enterprise and the American way of life. This show was heard by millions of Americans each week. Businessmen also created America's first libertarian think tank, the Foundation for Economic Education, established in 1946. Its leader was a man named Leonard Reed, who had previously worked for the Chamber of Commerce. Among Reed's supporters were Sun Oil Chairman J. Howard Pugh and other leaders of NAM, several executives from the DuPont Corporation, the libertarian thinkers Rose Wilder Lane and Ayn Rand, and some of the biggest names in American capitalism, Goodrich, Ford, Kettering, and Scripps. Reed's most famous essay was called I, Pencil, and it introduced the idea of what he called the mystery of the marketplace. It was the idea that the market had an almost magical ability to produce value, even though no one was in charge, and in fact, crucially, no one needed to be in charge. Market fundamentalists found intellectual allies in Austrian neoliberal economics, and they built an academic center at the University of Chicago to promote their ideas. A key thinker in this effort was the Austrian economist Friedrich von Hayek. While criticizing socialism as, quote, a foreign ideology, these businessmen brought the foreigner, von Hayek, to America and worked behind closed doors to get him hired at the University of Chicago. They also funded an influential project at the university called the Free Market Project to promote anti-government, pro-market thinking. Its marquee star was the young Milton Friedman. The key ideas came together under the idea of the indivisibility thesis. It was the claim that political and economic freedom were indivisible, such that any compromise to economic freedom, such as laws to prohibit child labor or guarantee a minimum wage, endangered political freedom. And this was the central thesis of Milton Friedman's book, Capitalism and Freedom, a book that would sell millions of copies, be made into a television series, and influence political leaders around the globe. In 1988, President Ronald Reagan would award Friedman both the Presidential Medal of Freedom and the National Medal of Science. Insight number four. These ideas were carried into popular culture through children's books and Hollywood films, and then into mainstream politics by Ronald Reagan. In the 1930s, the libertarian thinker Rose Wilder Lane had helped her mother, Laura Ingalls Wilder, compose the famous Little House on the Prairie series. These books were marketed as the true stories of Laura's life as a young girl on the prairie. But in fact, they weren't true. Rose had rewritten her mother's life story into a libertarian fantasy, which dishonestly denied the role of the federal government in making their life on the prairie possible. In the 1940s and 50s, right-wing movie makers and their allies deployed censorship, intimidation, and overt propaganda to change the tone of America's screens, away from films like The Grapes of Wrath, which criticized American capitalism, and toward material that celebrated it. A key figure in this was the libertarian novelist and screenwriter Ayn Rand, who was also an architect of Hollywood censorship codes. Her Screen Guide for Americans, aimed at influencing movie producers and directors, instructed that American films should glorify wealth, free enterprise, rugged individualism, and self-made men, and never suggest that wealth might ever be unfairly garnered or that opportunities might not be equal. Another figure in this effort was Ronald Reagan. Most Americans know that before becoming a politician, Reagan was an actor, but fewer are aware that his flagging screen career was revived by a job with the General Electric Corporation. Reagan hosted the popular television show GE Theater, which promoted stories of individualism and free enterprise. At the same time, he traveled across the country on behalf of GE, promoting the corporation's stridently individualist, anti-union, and anti-government vision. And while Reagan helped GE promote the ideology of free markets and free choice, the company was working to undermine unions and conspiring to rig electricity markets. Reagan went into GE a New Deal Democrat and came out an anti-government conservative Republican. GE transformed Reagan's political fortunes as well, as he emerged from this time with powerful backers in corporate America who helped him launch his political career. Reagan's election to the presidency in 1980 marked the mainstreaming of market fundamentalism. But Democrat Bill Clinton completed the Reagan Revolution with his deregulation of telecommunications and financial markets, declaring in a 1996 speech that, quote, the era of big government is over. Market fundamentalism had swept both major political parties, leading to financial calamity, to giant tech and telecommunications monopolies, to runaway wealth inequality, to the opioid crisis, and to our inability to deal with the greatest threat of our time, the climate crisis. Insight number five. There is no free market, and market fundamentalism bears little relation to Adam Smith. The century-long campaign to persuade Americans of what Reagan called the magic of the marketplace, to a large extent, has succeeded. But it relied not on evidence, but on falsehoods, half-truths, slippery slope arguments, misrepresentations of history, and above all, an elaborate system of propaganda. Its proponents claimed to be defending capitalism and constantly invoked Adam Smith. In fact, they were defending private interests by constructing a radical vision of deregulated capitalism far removed from Smith's vision. In fact, there's no such thing as the free market. Markets have existed since biblical times, and they have always operated under rules, sometimes tacit and informal, other times explicit and formalized. This is what the rule of law is. We set boundary for human activities based on our assessment of how they affect both participants and bystanders. We do not allow theft. We recognize property rights, but we also have zoning laws. Even Adam Smith knew that you had to regulate banks. The fact is, the decisions we make about how markets should and shouldn't operate don't intrude on the market, they define it. Just as the rules of football don't intrude on the game, they define the game. In denying these realities, market fundamentalism hinders our ability to solve real problems, to deal with market failures such as climate change and income inequality, situations in which markets, acting legally, produce problems that markets are unable to solve. The remedy for market failure is precisely what free market ideologues seek to discredit, namely government. Ronald Reagan was wrong. Our most consequential problems have arisen not because of too much government, but because of too little. Government is not the solution to all our problems, but it is the solution to many of our biggest ones. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you buy the book, and we hope you learn a lot by reading it.
Thank you, Naomi. That was Five Big Ideas from The Big Myth, How American Business Taught Us to Loathe Government and Love the Free Market by Naomi Oreskes and Eric M. Conway. You might also want to hear our book bite for Free Market, The History of an Idea by Jacob Saul. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.